I'm Judy Swallow and Predict Gordon. This is The Connection. What a difference a year makes. 15-0 for the UN resolution on Iraq. The result Tony Blair had fought and prayed for before the war. But at his news conference after the vote, he looked tired, haggard, haunted, much thinner and much older, and no wonder. At the G8 summit, he said he stands 100% behind the evidence that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. But that was last year's summit at Evian in France, 3 months after he sent British forces to fight in Iraq, with the majority of Brits opposed and fresh from a parliamentary battle he'd won by the skin of his teeth, thanks to his articulate powers of persuasion. Since then, no WMDs, the Kelly affair, post-war mayhem in Iraq, and a catalogue of domestic grievances that have got the British people doing what they do so well, grumbling and blaming their leader for everything but the rain. What a relief it must be for him to be away at this year's G8 in Georgia, escaping the grizzling hordes back home to be greeted by adoring schoolchildren on American soil. No slurs about Bush's poodle here. Thank God for Tony Blair is a refrain most often heard on this side of the pond. So what do you think? Are the Brits just plain blind to the Blair greatness, or has his blind loyalty to Bush proven his Achilles heel? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined from the BBC in London by Michael Brown, a political columnist for the Independent newspaper in London, also a former Conservative Member of Parliament from 1979 to 1997. And T.R. Reid joins me from studios KUVO in Denver, Colorado, where he's the Rocky Mountain Bureau Chief for the Washington Post. From 1998 to 2000, he was London correspondent for the newspaper. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Michael Brown, we're here in Britain on the eve of Euro elections and local elections, not something that really generally rallies the British people to the poll. But are they going to punish Tony at the polls?
They are, but fortunately for Tony Blair, he is also a very lucky politician, and right from out of nowhere, the opposition Conservative Party, which would in ordinary circumstances expect to capitalise on Tony Blair's relative unpopularity, they themselves are facing a challenge from the United Kingdom Independence Party at these European elections. This is a fringe party which believes in withdrawing Britain from the European community. That's going to very heavily damage the Conservative Party. And so Tony Blair is, like Houdini, possibly going to get away with the unpopularity which has bedeviled him over the course of the last few months.
OK, very difficult, complex issues and fringe parties, as you say, so it's splitting a vote which isn't going to be very strong anyway. But give us the big picture. If the British people want to punish Tony Blair, punish him for what? What are they annoyed about?
Basically, the British people are enjoying, as America is, a very benign economy. Economic growth in the United Kingdom is very good. We've had economic growth for several years. Unemployment is down. Inflation is low. The big picture is that the economy, stupid, is going well, as Bill Clinton might have said. So that is the basic fundamentals which always give Tony Blair, ultimately, when an election comes along, the advantage. But he is very unpopular within, and it's the opposition within the Labour Party, which is causing him the biggest difficulty. Traditionally, the Labour Party in Britain is a left-of-centre party. It is instinctively the peace party, the anti-war party. And its relations with America are always a little bit cool, and insofar as there is a relationship politically, it is always with the Democrats. So the average Labour Party supporter and Labour Party activist cannot understand why it is there is this incredible personal relationship between a left-of-centre British politician who leads their party, the Labour Party, with this Republican right-wing president. Everybody can understand the relationship between Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan. They were from the right, their philosophy was very similar, and people could understand that. But within the Labour Party, that is where the greatest difficulty for Tony Blair's leadership comes.
T.R. Reid, can you understand this relationship between Bush and Blair?
I totally do, because I don't want to, you know, drop names or anything, Judy, but in 2001, I went over to Downing Street and had a chat with Tony Blair about this new American president, because, you know, Blair and Clinton, as you said, are basically the same guy. They both pulled a leftist party to the center to get elected. They're both lawyers. They're both married to strong, powerful lawyers. You could see a relationship there. And I said to Blair, how are you going to get along with this Texas cowboy? And he said to me, I am definitely going to be a close friend of George W. Bush. There's no question about it. He hadn't even met Bush once at this point. He said, it's my job as the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom to be the friend of the United States President, and I'm going to do it. And doggone it, he did it. He went to Camp David about 3 weeks after that. They shook hands. They put their arms around each other. Bush made him sit up for some really stupid American movie that Blair complained about when he got home. But to the Americans, he was very friendly. And he's defined Britain as the bridge nation between Europe and the United States. And if you're the bridge, you better be friendly with both ends. So he thinks it's his job as Prime Minister to be friendly with Bush, and doggone it, he's going to do it.
Now, the thing is, Tiara, I think there are two questions that the British people ask, or maybe the Labour Party asks, how can he be pals with Bush? The second question is, why do Americans just adore him? Why do Americans adore Blair?
Well, is it okay if I disagree with you, Judy? You said earlier that people like Blair because he's on our side in Iraq. I don't think that's it at all. In fact, more than half of the people in America are now against the war in Iraq. I think what he's got going for him in America is he shares our basic values and our vision for the world, and he's much more articulate and convincing than our leader when he talks about it, and I think Americans really appreciate that. Another factor is if you go back to 9/11, the nation that lost the most people in that tragedy was the United States, but the second biggest loss of life was among Brits. And therefore, Blair, from the first day, was right at the shoulder of George W. Bush, saying, we're in this together, we're joint victims, and we're going to fight back together. And Americans love that. I mean, we needed a friend at that time, and here was this articulate, convincing, likable person on our side. If I can just tell you one other thing, he's very good at stroking us, Blair is. Whenever he's in America, or whenever he would talk to me, for example, when I was in London, he says the nicest things about our country. We're just the greatest people in the world. The last time he was in America for a G8 summit was in 1997. It was right here in Denver, Colorado, America's greatest city, I might point out. And He told the Denver papers he totally loved our city. He loved everything about it. And then he went home to Britain and he said to the British papers, it's an interesting place. It looks pretty good, but they always warned me not to leave the hotel at night. Now, he was quite good at stroking us.
T.R., you make the point, or you believe that it's not the Iraq war that's got Americans loving Blair, but as Michael Brown pointed out, it is the Iraq war that's alienated Blair from the Brits. So let's hear some of that great oratory you're talking about. Here he is last night after the unanimous UN resolution.
For the Iraqis themselves, this means they have a unified world community on their side, helping them towards the stability and the democracy and the prosperity they want to see for themselves. And I think for the terrorists and the fanatics, the former regime elements that are trying to stop this process of democracy, I think they now know that it isn't just the United States and the UK, or indeed the multinational force, it's the whole of the United Nations and the world community. And what we're really saying is, whatever the divisions of the past, whatever the differences in the past, let us unite now in a different vision for a modern Iraq, capable of being that force for good for Iraqis and also for the wider region and the world.
So Michael Brown in London, it's about 15 months after the first time he might have wanted a unanimous UN resolution to go to war on Iraq. But does this draw a line now under his troubled last 15 months?
It certainly changes the climate of opinion politically amongst the equivalent of your Beltway community. Things look very much brighter over the course of the last couple of weeks for Tony Blair on the domestic political front than they could ever have, anybody could have imagined a month or two ago. But nevertheless, the problems that Tony Blair encountered with, again, I come back to his own party. At the end of the day, you played that clip of him speaking last night. It is the clips of Tony Blair last year in the House of Commons about weapons of mass destruction. Remember, in Britain, the validation of the British entry into the coalition was always not on the basis of regime change. It was always sold to the House of Commons. This man has weapons of mass destruction. That is always going to haunt Tony Blair. And although the diplomatic victory in the United Nations is a significant advance and can allow Tony Blair to relax his guard, it will be events, any unpleasant event in Iraq, such as the Abu Ghraib incident last month, any security event can suddenly come back to haunt Tony Blair. But politically, this is indeed, this diplomatic triumph yesterday is certainly going to ease the pressure on him.
As Macmillan said, I think you were about to quote events, dear boy, events. But let's look back at events last year. Was the perception that Tony Blair, to stand shoulder to shoulder with George Bush, went to the brink, that if he'd lost that parliamentary battle at that moment, Tony Blair would have been out?
Oh, yes, there's no question of that. We have a parliamentary democracy whereby the Prime Minister has to submit his policy for the endorsement in a vote in the House of Commons, and it was only the support of the Conservative opposition in the same division lobby, the Conservative members of Parliament joining government members of Parliament who didn't rebel, that saved Tony Blair's bacon. If Tony Blair had lost that vote last year, and if indeed that vote had been held with everybody knowing what the outcome on weapons of mass destruction was going to be, ultimately, if people could have read the future, they might have actually had more rebels in the division lobby against the policy. There was no doubt that, to be fair to Tony Blair, he did take, and I agree with Tom, he does have a genuine, sincere support for the American people, America as a country. He presses all those buttons that Margaret Thatcher did, and he genuinely does communicate that inside the House of Commons. But if he'd have lost that vote last year, that would have been certainly the end of his premiership.
TR, that's a very high price to pay for a friendship, even a friendship with the President of the United States. Do you how would you characterize this friendship? Do you think Bush uses Blair?
Yes, absolutely. And I think Blair's not getting much back. What did it take? Took the Brits 2 years to get those seven or eight men out of Guantanamo. And then as soon as they were released, the British found there was no charge against them and let them go free. Yeah, I think Blair definitely uses Bush. He needs a friend in the world, frankly. He's almost as battered at home as Blair is in Britain. And he needs an articulate, forceful friend to stand up and say you're doing the right thing.
And Michael Brown, he's still suffering cruelly, isn't he? I mean, your paper has a sort of nonstop campaign against the war and against everything
yes.
that was done in Iraq, but the cartoons are cruel. I mean,
yes.
in cartoon after cartoon, Blair is just portrayed as this little poodle.
Yes. The point that Tom's just made is very important, and this is what costs Tony Blair a lot of support in Britain. Tony Blair has been very, very publicly loyal to George Bush, and one assumes that he's also loyal to him privately. But there is not that tension in the relationship which there was between Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan. Margaret Thatcher, everybody knew that she and he were soulmates. I was a Conservative Member of Parliament throughout the Reagan presidency, and I recall vividly how Margaret Thatcher would publicly pour cold water on the Reagan administration if it was doing things which she did not approve of.
Michael Brown, we'll come back to that after the break. Do join the conversation. We're talking Blair this hour. Is he the best president the US will never have? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection from NPR. We're talking about Tony Blair, the British Prime Minister this hour, and asking why Americans love him when the British love affair with Tony Blair is well and truly over. My guests are Michael Brown, political columnist for the Independent newspaper in London, a former Conservative Member of Parliament, and T.R. Reid. He's Rocky Mountains bureau chief for the Washington Post. He used to be London correspondent for the Independent. He's also got a book coming out called The United States of Europe, a theme we'll pick up shortly. But we'd like to hear what you think. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Calvin joins us from the Outer Banks of North Carolina. Calvin, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's your point?
Well, my point is that Tony Blair is basically all of George Bush's missing parts. He's articulate, he's reflective, he's polished, he's intelligent, conciliatory, he's worldly. A little bit of that masterpiece theater cachet, and on top of that, I think we all feel like, gosh, golly, I wish I had a president like him.
It does sound like hero worship. Where'd you get this idea?
I mean, just watching him on C-SPAN and during Question Time, and just his general comments as he articulates American foreign policy. I mean, the man can speak in paragraphs, and he seems to understand what he's talking about.
Do you like him just because he's a good talker, or do you really like his policies?
Oh, no, I think that it's clear that he understands the situation. I think he probably has a better grasp on world politics and world economic conditions than his partner in the States. I just think he's just generally, he's the kind of person that that should rise to the top in political circles.
If he were an American and, you know, given his policies, would you vote for him if he ran for president?
From the point of view of his from his foreign policy policy, yes. From the point of view of economic policies, I'm not real sure and real clear because we don't get to see both sides of the apple as far as what his domestic policies are like in the UK.
Yep, I think T.R. Reid will agree with that. T.R., a lot of Americans love him, and a lot of them think he's George Bush with the cracks filled in. A lot of people don't know Tony Blair, do they? They don't know the Labour Party.
Well, you know, I looked at his policies once, and although he's very popular in America, I wrote, I don't think he could get elected dog catcher in any American county if people knew his policies. This is a man who favors cradle-to-grave health care for everyone paid for by the government. He favors a total ban on handguns. He favors a monthly government check to every family with children, your child benefit. We don't have that here. He favors abortion on demand paid for by the government. He supports a tax regime with taxes twice as high as ours, and he's actually raised them. I think if people knew how left he was by American standards, he might win an election to the state legislature in Vermont, but beyond that, I don't think he's got a chance in American politics.
Michael Brown, you heard that adulation from Calvin. Is the perception in Britain that Americans are just misguided?
It's the exact flip side of the coin, Judy. Tom has just indicated how it is that everything that Tony Blair stands for, all his policies in Britain, wouldn't get past go in the United States. But, of course, the articulate way in which you need a friend when your back's against the wall, and Britain has traditionally been your ally, but here is Tony Blair standing shoulder to shoulder with America, much in the same way as we've had those relationships in previous times, Roosevelt and Churchill. I can understand the adulation, but we, of course, in Britain have to pay for Tony Blair's policies, and all those policies that Tom has just listed are not only policies supported by Tony Blair, but being implemented by Tony Blair, and we all have to pay the taxes and the bills. Knowing the American economic culture and your culture of taxation and your attitude towards welfare, as I do, I would absolutely agree. The policies of Tony Blair would be utterly unelectable in America. But on foreign policy, of course, and that is the only basis on which you, the American people, have a relationship with us, and the only thing that is of concern to you is the diplomatic relationship between Tony Blair, the fact that he has been Prime Minister for some time, is likely to remain Prime Minister for some time. You deal with him on a regular basis as an ally, and I can absolutely understand the adulation. But of course, in Britain, the war is a nuisance, it's an irritant.
And Michael, is this dislike or this end of the honeymoon with Blair, is that because the British people do not like Bush? I mean,
yes.
Do they dislike Bush in the same,
yes,
to the same percent?
Very much so. I mean, to give you an example, every time British people read just how much is the admiration for Tony Blair, Labour Party spin doctors actually now know that is damaging in Britain. This weekend we had the Normandy ceremonies, and there was great relief amongst Tony Blair's press officers that there were no pictures in the British press of Tony Blair shaking hands alongside George Bush. All the pictures that we saw in Britain were either Tony Blair shaking hands with President Chirac or George Bush shaking hands with President Chirac. Every time now there is a press conference, an international press conference, where Tony Blair and George Bush are physically side by side with each other, it damages Tony Blair electorally in Britain.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, to join the conversation. Rob's joining us from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, thank you.
What do you like to tell us about Blair?
Well, actually, just to further a point that your last caller made and your American guest, they talked about Blair being articulate. But I think more than that, he's also prepared to go in front of the public and take hard questions and give his honest answers. And, you know, he frequently makes the point, you may not agree with me, but this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. That is just something we're completely starved of in America.
But don't you think, Rob, that that's largely because of the culture of the British Parliament? They're used to having prime minister's question times and battling it out, you know.
Well, it goes beyond prime minister's question time. I mean, Tony Blair's actually been on television programs in front of whole audiences that were hostile to him. And then you compare that to this administration that even by American standards is the most tight-lipped, closed administration that's been seen since Nixon.
T.R. Reid, what do you think? Is Tony Blair everything Bush is not? He's honest, he's articulate, he's very intelligent?
Well, he's certainly more articulate. I think they probably do share the same worldview, but President Bush has just not been as successful at portraying it as Blair is. So there's that. As I say, he's way far to the left of Bush or Clinton, for that matter, on most policy issues, which just reflects the fact that he's running a European country, not the United States, which is different. I think our current president is perfectly willing to stand up and say, this is what I believe and I'm doing it, even when it's unpopular. That's certainly what he's doing on the war in Iraq. I don't think he's drop back an inch on that, even though anybody can see that the thing is going badly, and it's going badly for him. So in that sense, he and Blair are the same. I have to say, Michael, I don't know how you feel. I was incredibly disappointed when I started going to Parliament and watching PMQs, Prime Minister's Questions. I don't see a man taking hard questions and giving straight answers. I see a bunch of clever political insults thrown at him, and he opens his briefing book and reads the answer somebody wrote for him. I was very disappointed with PMQs when I actually saw it.
Yeah, Michael, do you think that the culture is very different in Britain from in the United States? Or is it just different forms of performance and the Americans quite like the British model at the moment?
Yes. First of all, the culture is different. Our Prime Minister has to go to Prime Minister's Questions. And I think that some of your callers may be seeing the Prime Minister's Questions time through slightly rose-tinted spectacles. We cynics in the press gallery, as Tom's just indicated, recognise that providing you've got somebody who is a good communicator like Tony Blair, and one of the big problems at the moment that Britain has got is that there is a lack of a credible alternative opposition prime minister. The Conservative Party has been for nearly a decade now absolutely bereft of people who've been able to put one over Tony Blair. There is an element of schoolboy knockabout in the House of Commons. On the other hand, that does mean that the Prime Minister constantly has to be quick-witted. It is the case that Tony Blair has to face Prime Minister's Question Time. To be fair to him, one of the most effective areas where he gets scrutiny now also is that he has, and it was he who initiated it, to be fair to him, he has a monthly press conference in Downing Street. To be absolutely honest, the press haven't really got the ability to put one over him. He seems to emerge from those press conferences pretty well. But he does, to be fair to him, he does face the press, he does face members of Parliament, and he does face the public on television in a way which your culture ensures that the president can protect himself from.
Of course, many might say that his big challenge comes from within the party, your namesake, Gordon Brown, but we'll get to that a bit later. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Randall's joining us from Ipswich, Mass. Hi, Randall.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, what do you want to say about Blair?
Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to provide a counterpoint to the notion that all Americans love Tony Blair.
You don't like him?
Well, I think that Tony Blair provided, international kind of sanctification or help Bush to invade Iraq. You know, without Tony Blair kind of by his side with the rest of the international community, or at least the the Western European and and most of the UN against this, you know, he would never have been able to have I think politically gone into Iraq. So
were you against the war, Randall?
Yes, I was.
And you blame Tony Blair for giving George Bush the cover to go into war?
Absolutely. And you know, this kind of I find it kind of pathetic that we're all falling over Tony Blair's because he's so articulate in comparison to Bush. I mean, a bologna sandwich is articulate in comparison to Bush.
Okay, Randall, you got both our guests laughing. T.R. Reid, is that true? I mean, without Tony Blair, would there have been no war in Iraq?
No, Bush would have gone to war in Iraq without Blair, but as I said, having Blair there made it much easier, and I said earlier, I don't think the Iraq war has helped Blair at all with the American people. In fact, I'm sure, just as we heard, it's eaten away at his popularity in America. We liked him after 9/11. We like him when he expresses our vision of a free world with liberties for people everywhere, because he does such a good job of it. But his support for the war in Iraq is definitely undermining his popularity in America, and every month's poll shows less and less support for that war among the American people, and there's Blair out there arguing for it, and that definitely undermines its popularity here. I think the gentleman has a point.
Well, let's go to Michael Brown, because, Michael, we should explain that your paper, The Independent, has been viscerally against the war from the start and has had sometimes just about the entire edition taken over by saying what has gone wrong, chapter and verse of all the things
yes.
you think has gone wrong. Is the perception by your paper, by the British public, that there would have not been no war had Blair not stood behind George Bush?
Oh, I'm convinced there would have been a war. I don't think Tony Blair stood between there being a war and no war. And it's just that Tony Blair, having decided right from the word go that he had the opportunity either of influencing the president from within, and to be fair to Tony Blair, he did believe in the view of George Bush that it was right to take on Saddam Hussein. So I have no doubt at all that there would have been a war, and that it wasn't as though the participation of Tony Blair or not would have made any difference to that. But we do think that Tony Blair has failed to use his influence and has not got anything back in return for the support that he's given to George Bush.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'd like to bring in Lou from Buffalo in New York. Hi, Lou. What do you think of Tony Blair?
Hear, hear. I think he's an excellent natural leader, very articulate. I'd like him to be my president of the United States. And I'll tell you, I'm very, very proud of him to stand alongside the United States as a coalition, because here's my observation regarding these weapons of mass destruction. I did not ever really fully appreciate the effort that Hans Blix and the UN was doing to try to determine whether the weapons of mass destruction existed or did not.
So you reckon that the UN had not convinced you, had not made sure
absolutely.
There was no threat, and Blair was right to say the threat's there, we got to check it out.
Absolutely. It was a military intervention by the United States and Britain that allows me to sleep better nights knowing that there is not a threat of weapons of mass destruction, WMD, in Iraq. That's my observation.
Well, Michael Brown, Tony Blair has said that, okay, it looks as if there are no WMDs. He's still saying there might be. But back in March last year, he absolutely, totally believed that the threat was there. Do you think most British people believe him that, given the information he had at the time, he took the right decision?
Most people believed, and I use the past tense, at the time that he took the right decision. There's no doubt that at the time there was pretty solid backing, notwithstanding the 2 million people who marched on the streets. But opinion polls at the time took Tony Blair on trust. Now, opinion polls, as a consequence of Tony Blair's selling the war on the basis of weapons of mass destruction, which have not now materialised. The problem that Tony Blair has domestically, apart from his relationship with George Bush, is you can't believe a word this man says. And the whole basis of Tony Blair's premiership began in 1997, after the sleaze-ridden Tory years, on the basis of we are a new, whiter-than-white, purer-than-pure government. I'm Tony, trust me. And the biggest breach of trust with the British people was the basis on which he sold his reasons for supporting George Bush in the war against terror. And so I think that that is the fundamental problem that he is always going to be suffering, and it'll spread over the domestic agenda. When Tony Blair says, I won't put up your taxes, or I will do this with the health service, or I won't do that with the education service, or there will be less crime, we now have a problem of trust, which is undermining Tony Blair.
TRE, do Americans still trust Tony Blair?
Yeah, Americans still trust Tony Blair. I think most Americans would agree that he was wrong on weapons of mass destruction, even wrong on the threat. But in terms of a broader worldview of a man who's in pace with our vision for the world, of our values, and can set it forth in an articulate way, I think most Americans still respect that. I think also, you know, American listeners won't believe this, but our media are pussycats compared to the British papers. I mean, they are so tough. I was covering Blair for about
nasty,
6 years,
actually.
And oh, brutal. The whole time I was there, I would bet you 40 weeks out of every year, the Sunday papers reported Blair just had his worst week. I mean, every week was his worst week.
True.
And then somehow in 2001, after 4 years of terrible weeks, he wins a smashing runaway reelection victory. So I think some of this is, well, just
hyperbole.
Like we do, I will confess to the crime of creating a tight race in a political situation when there really wasn't one. And I think the British papers do that all the time. Michael, I wanted to ask you if I can, do you think the Tories blew it by supporting the war? I mean, suppose they'd come out against the war from the beginning. Wouldn't they be stronger today?
Well, I, as a Conservative who opposed the war and has taken the same view as the Independent, do think the Conservative Party trapped itself right from the word go.
Michael Brown, we'll have to leave it there. So I think that was a yes from Michael Brown. T.R. Reid, Michael Brown, we'll be right back after the break. Do join the conversation. What do you think of Tony Blair? Greatest president you never had, or are you losing faith in him? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection from NPR. We're looking at Tony Blair this hour and asking, why is he loved so much more on this side of the pond than the other? 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK is how you join The Connection conversation. Hart's joining us from Hilton Head Island in South Carolina. Hi, Hart. What do you think of Tony Blair?
Well, I would like to hear this discussed. The discussion and analysis that I've heard of as to why the honeymoon is over is all very interesting. But I wonder if Tony Blair has just been in office so long that it's time to throw the booger out. And I'll turn my radio off and or phone off and listen on the radio.
I wasn't sure you could actually use that word on U.S. radio. But anyway, Hart, thanks for your call. Let's put that to Michael Brown. Michael, is it the case he's been in office for 7 years? Margaret Thatcher made it to 11, but there were grumblings from about 7. You were a Conservative MP throughout her reign. Is it getting to the point where the British people are saying, time for a change?
It's time for a change, probably, of Prime Minister, but the British people recognise that the Labour Party is still the only plausible governing party at the present time. Then the opposition party simply has not made any impression on the British public. What I suspect is going to happen is that Tony Blair, unlike America, we don't have fixed terms. The incumbent government chooses the time of the general election, no longer than 5 years after the last one. We all assume that Tony Blair will probably call a general election in May of next year. I think the odds are that the Labour Party will get re-elected, and about a year into that term, Tony Blair will retire and probably hand over to Gordon Brown.
Well, we'll look at that in a moment, but T.R. Reid, any American politician would be envious of the power the power to stay in office of a British politician, wouldn't they?
It's amazing how much power a prime minister has. I think Americans don't know this institutional situation, but a key point is that there are no primary elections in Britain. If you want to be the Labour Party candidate for Parliament from East Winging or something, you can't go get elected for that. There's a committee that picks you to be the candidate, and of course, almost all those committees all over the country are controlled by Labour's central office, which means controlled by Tony Blair. So if you are the candidate from Little Dorking or something and you get elected, you know who gave you that job. Tony Blair gave you that job. And I think, what's the number, Michael, of 400-some Labour members of the House of Commons?
412 Labour members of Parliament, yeah.
And more than 200 of them were first elected either in 97 or 2001. They
But totally 139 of him 139 of them voted against him over the war. He's not
I bet
safe.
They wouldn't vote against him. Would they vote against dump him for Gordon?
No,
I bet not.
No.
What do you think?
I think that the there has obviously been some kind of informal arrangement. We're getting a view emerging from the top ministers in Britain that there is some kind of acceptance by Tony Blair. He refuses when pressed. Everybody says, Mr. Blair, will you stand as Prime Minister at the next general election? To which he always says, yes. Mr. Blair, will you serve as Prime Minister for the whole of that term if Labour becomes the government? This is the big difference between this country, institutionally, Britain and America. We vote for a government. We don't vote for a single person to be Prime Minister. And Tony Blair refuses to commit himself to serving the whole of the third term were he to be re-elected at the next general election, which indicates that there's probably some kind of deal.
You're with the conspiracy theory, aren't you, Michael Brown, that there was this deal prior to the 1997 election. I mean, there's even been television programs against it for American audiences who don't know about it, that Gordon Brown, who is now the Chancellor, the Finance Minister, and
yes.
Tony Blair made a deal that at a certain time Tony would stand down for Gordon, and it's what the papers are going mad on at the moment. We'll come
That's
back.
That's right, but there's pretty good evidence emerging from the statements by the Deputy Prime Minister, John Prescott, over the course of the last two or three weeks, that there is some kind of suspicion that Tony Blair himself recognises exactly the point of your question, that there is a shelf life to a leader. In America, your constitution sets that shelf life at a maximum of 8 years. In this country, as you said, by the time of the next election, Tony Blair will have been Prime Minister for 8 years if we have an election next year, and probably in around about the 9th or 10th year, probably the 9th year, we think that the odds are Tony Blair himself has recognised that there is a shelf life to an international leader.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Adrienne is joining us from Southfield, Michigan. Hi, Adrienne. Do you like Tony Blair?
I do, actually, but I'm very curious about why he's chosen to pursue this sort of relationship with Bush, who seems to me rather antithetical to everything else that he does. So my questions for your guests are, what would be the fallout for Tony Blair to cut his ties with Bush at this point, especially in light of all of the information that's been coming out of Iraq? And also, what advantage was there in the first place of this relationship to either Britain or to Blair politically?
Well, let's throw that to T.R. Reid. T.R., you said that Blair didn't seem to get an awful lot out of this relationship. Can you explain it?
Well, as I said, I think he feels it's his job as Prime Minister of Britain to be friendly with the U.S. President, and part of the challenge is to be friendly with a guy he doesn't have much in common with. You know, I know Brits hate this, but a former U.S. Secretary of War, Henry Stimson, famously said in the 1950s, he said, Britain lost an empire and has not found a new role. Well, you know, I know that Brits always hated it when I said that, but it's probably true. And I think Blair has been looking for a role, and the role he defined for Britain. He sometimes calls it the bridge nation. He sometimes says the pivot nation.
Yeah, you're writing on the U.S. of Europe. I mean, he said he was going to be the bridge between the U.S. and Europe, but that has not worked at all, has it? He's not only alienated the British people, the perception is that he also alienated the rest of the European Union, who see him as being totally aligned with the United States.
Yeah, and I'll bet you he would say, well, the problem isn't his theory. His theory is he's the bridge, and that's fine. His problem is that our end of the bridge, Bush, has been so unpopular in Europe that he's kind of pulled Blair down with him. I would have said, what, 2 years ago, Tony Blair was the most popular politician in Europe, too. But I'm not sure that's true anymore because he's too close to Bush. But I think the reason he did it was because, you know, if John Kerry wins the election in November, you watch, Tony Blair is going to be his best friend, too. I don't think it matters who the person is or even what the politics are. He feels it's his job to be there. I don't know if you remember this. Most Americans don't know this, but when it was very important to Blair that he be the first European leader chosen to come visit Bush when Bush first became president, they went to Camp David together, and a British reporter said to President Bush, "What do you have in common with this lefty from Britain?" And Bush said, "We both use Colgate toothpaste." Do you remember that? It was so
bizarre. Colgate.
And I remember a column in Michael's paper, The Independent, where somebody was trying to explain that in Texas it's very important to use the same toothpaste as your best mate or something like that. I mean, nobody's ever figured this out. And I remember Blair was kind of perplexed by it too. But he doesn't care. Toothpaste, whatever. He feels it's his job to be friendly, and as I say, no matter who wins the November election, he's going to be a close pal of that winner.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Lorraine's calling us from Cambridge, Mass. Hi, Lorraine.
Hi, thanks for this program. I got a Christmas card from England this year from a friend who's been living in London for several years now with her husband. He's over there in business. And she mentioned in this card, among all the things she had to say, that Tony Blair had broken every promise he'd ever made, and what did I think about that? Well, I had the feeling she could list them off very fast, and I had no idea what she was talking about. I hope you could clarify. And Judy Swallow, I just want to say to you, it doesn't mean anything to me if people say bugger on NPR, because I've heard it for years in Masterpiece Theater. A soldier saying it, and I've never understood what it meant. And I thought, you of all people will know a polite NPR way of explaining to me.
No, I don't know a polite way of explaining it to you, Lorraine, but let's take your first point about Tony Blair. Michael Brown, you know, breaking every election promise, I mean, 'twas always thus, was
absolutely.
It not?
Absolutely. In Britain, the sort of things that people attack Tony Blair for are the bread and butter issues of daily politics. You promised that you'd get waiting lists down in the British National Health Service. We have this state-financed, state-run, monolithic National Health Service, free at the point of use, absolutely adored by everybody in Britain. There were huge waiting lists when the Labour Party came into power. They didn't go down. The Labour Party's been raising lots of taxes, and there doesn't appear on the face of it to be any improvement in the public services. That's probably what the correspondent to your caller was referring to.
Exactly. It's domestic issues. There's university top-up fees as well. They're going to introduce tuition in universities and all these other
things.
That's
right. Yeah.
But is this seen as Tony Blair has lost his domestic agenda because he's been paying too much attention to the U.S. interest, particularly the wars that he's been fighting alongside George
Bush? I wouldn't say that he has lost it. There was a risk that he was in danger of losing his domestic agenda. I do think, actually, if we were to have this conversation in a month's time, just as we are on the verge of these local elections, which we've got in Britain, the European elections in a couple of days' time, I think Tony Blair is going to come out of them a lot better than we have expected. And I do think that the change of diplomatic circumstances over the last 24 hours has changed the picture. Fog can descend and recede in Britain in politics very, very fast.
Just like in London.
He's probably the worst.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Roger's joining us from York, Maine. Hi, Roger.
Hi. This is about the phenomenon of Blair being more popular in the U.S. than he is in England.
Uh-huh.
I seem to remember something like that happening with Gorbachev. He was much more popular in the United States than he was in the Soviet Union. I think it's simply a matter of the American people not getting an awful lot of foreign news from most news sources. And, you know, Blair is just a name to most people, and they don't have to live with his policies.
TRE, do you think that's a lot of it, that Americans are sort of fascinated by the rest of the world? They want to learn a little bit more about history, so a leader who's articulate comes onto these shores and they find him charismatic?
Well, it's partly that, but, you know, if he were charismatic and articulate on the wrong side, we wouldn't like him. The fact is we like him because he shares our values, because we see that he stands for the same things we believe we should be standing for. I don't think his policies would be popular in the United States, although I think he'd make a darn good case for him. Having lived myself in Britain for 6 years just now, I think your health care system, for all the British dump on it, was better than the one we've got at home, at least for my family of five relatively healthy people. We did much better under the NHS than we do in the American system. I'd love to have Blair come here and sell this system to Americans.
Okay, but there you go. One vote for Blair in the U.S. But Michael Brown, can I ask you, as we're coming to the end of the program, is it going to hurt Blair or help him if John Kerry wins the election? You said that a lot of the dislike of Blair is because of his attachment to Bush. Will it enhance him? Can he switch sides that quickly and improve his fortunes?
I don't think it's frankly going to make an awful lot of difference. It is the story which we're all speculating on in Britain, which will be the better person from Blair's point of view. Personally, I think Kerry will be better for Blair, because after November the 5th, or whatever day the election is in America, the first week in November, George Bush won't need Tony Blair anymore. George Bush will have fought his last election. He won't need Tony Blair. So if I was Tony Blair, would probably privately hope that Kerry wins, but I suspect that it's going to be George Bush from where we're looking at your election.
T.R. Reid, if John Kerry does win, will he welcome Blair with open arms? Now, he seems to have been snubbing him of late.
I didn't. That's a very British sensitivity there. I haven't noticed him snubbing Blair. Maybe
well, they haven't been publicly schmoozing, let's put it that way.
My guess would be that Bush is going to lose this election, and I think Kerry will immediately embrace Blair. Blair will be there to embrace Kerry, as I said, because he thinks it's his job to do so. And I think they'll get along just fine. And I think on domestic policy issues, they'll be a lot closer than Bush and Blair are. And that's an interesting question. Kerry's job, if he's elected, is going to be to get us out of Iraq. And if he's got Tony Blair there still charging for staying there, that might be a problem for Kerry, which I hadn't thought of before. But
well,
they're going to get along fine.
You ask two economists the same question, you get two completely diametrically opposed answers. Seems the same is true for political journalists. Thanks to my guest today, Michael Brown, political columnist for the Independent newspaper in London. Thanks, too, to T.R. Reid, Rocky Mountains bureau chief and former London correspondent for The Washington Post. The Connection is produced by Anne-Marie Dorning, Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fanalosa, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Shugarts. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection from NPR.